Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segretto, and this is Franchise Today. It's Wednesday, August 10th, and I am back from some pretty interesting oral surgery, and I certainly want to thank my co-host, Stan Friedman, for taking the reins and running through a great interview last week. Stan, it's always good to be back talking with you.
Paul, it's good to hear your voice again. It's just not the same. You know, I tried hard as I could to banter with myself last week, and it just wasn't the same. It just doesn't work the same.
Like I said in the prep, I'm still drooling a little bit, and I know you're telling me and telling everybody it's my age, but I want to remind everybody that you are older than I am. So.
Yeah, Paul, but I'm gonna just bounce back on that a little bit and remind you that anybody and everybody who knows you expects that of you. Paul, don't worry about it. It's just okay.
All right, I'm going to leave it at that because I'm not in the frame to banter, and I think I'd be on the losing end of this. So tell us something good about front of the house.
Well, I've got a couple of things. Hey, I want to tease something first. There'll be a press release coming out tomorrow. So I don't want to spill the beans too much, but speaking of Fishman Public Relations and our friends there who so often bring us guests, as we've been treated to today with today's guest, Fishman will be issuing a press release tomorrow that deals with PAFI and a major announcement on PAFI and an upcoming summit that we'll be doing. And I'm not going to spill the beans too much except to say watch the wires tomorrow and learn more about the next phase of PAFI and the Pro Athlete Franchise Initiative. Here at home, caught my eye today that a year or two, maybe three ago, Dunkin' Donuts was just never anything you saw of anything of, much less at all in the Atlanta marketplace. Seems lately I can't turn a corner without seeing another Dunkin', which pleases me. See today that Dunkin' has signed yet another franchise agreement for an additional 13 stores in the Atlanta market, and some of those, actually four of them, will be co-branded with Baskin-Robbins. So from, you know, nowhere to be found in the Southeast to a pretty extensive and growing footprint, congratulations to Dunkin' for exercising the growth of the brand here in the great Southeast, and happy to see something other than Starbucks on most every other corner. So what else is going on, Paul? I'll tell you about early bird registration, believe it or not. Early bird registration is open for the 2017 IFA convention. It just doesn't feel like we're there yet, but apparently, you know, here we go into the fall season, and convention is just a few months away at the Mandalay Bay this year in Las Vegas. And there are some early bird registration opportunities, book early and save money offers now available at hashtag IFA2017. So make sure to get that on the grid and save some bucks, folks, for registering early. And speaking of convention and upcoming opportunities, there's a call for young entrepreneurs to apply for Next Gen Global Competition. The Franchise Education and Research Foundation is looking for 20 outstanding young entrepreneurs who are poised to take off if given the mentoring and support from franchise business leaders. Next Gen in Franchising's Global Competition is open to entrepreneurs 21 to 35 years old who've been in business for 1 to 5 years with the potential to scale their businesses through franchising. Winners will receive a trip to the IFA convention, a spot at the Next Gen in Franchising Summit, and a 90-day accelerator program with industry leaders and CEOs, and much, much more. You can apply online at nextgenfranchising.org and contact Elaine Jacobs or Gion Jones for more information on the Next Gen competition at the upcoming IFA convention. Registration's also open for ICFE special sessions at the convention. And, again, get into those early because those CFE sessions fill up and there are a great many credits. There's no opportunity greater than the IFA convention to score the mother load of CFE points if you time it right. And so don't wait. Registration's open now, and if you're looking for CFE credits this year, don't let the IFA convention pass you by. It's a tremendous opportunity to earn those. I also want to remind you to save the date for the Franchising Gives Back Celebration and Awards Dinner coming up Monday, September 12th at the JW Marriott Ballroom as part of the Franchise Action Network Conference. And for those of you who have yet to register, please make certain you bring yourselves, franchisors, and as many of your franchisees as possible to our annual pilgrimage to Capitol Hill this year. More than ever, it's important every year, but it's really urgent and important this year that your franchisees and their voices are heard by legislators up on the Hill. The last thing or two I want to point out, Paul, is one here that, you know, we try to stay positive as we can every week and talk in the positive. But, you know, I don't know about you, Paul, but I've been overwhelmed with really kind of mentality when it comes to Pokemon Go. And here this week in the IFA Insider, Pokemon Go rears its ugly head and says, you can learn how to catch more customers at Frantech 2016. The Pokemon Go craze has gripped the nation. Businesses are either ignoring or embracing it, and much more people are out on the streets constantly walking by businesses. IFA is urging its members to participate by attending Frantech 2016 to learn exactly how to get these people to come to your business. I got a flash for you, Paul. There are probably better reasons than that to register for Frantech 2016. And I'm just saying.
I'm sure. You know, Stan, one other thing I'd like to get on everybody's radar is Springboard, a special event for emerging franchisors, which is in Philadelphia, September 21st through 23rd at the Logan Hotel in the city of brotherly love. It's a forum for franchise founders and senior executives to discuss common pitfalls facing all emerging brands and to describe how real people and companies overcame foreseeable obstacles and made the most of fleeting opportunities. If you have any questions on this, I'd reach out to Lane Fisher at Fisher Zucker or Brad Fishman at Fishman Public Relations. This is really a good event that is growing in popularity, but is still somewhat under the radar in the busy time of the franchise event season. And some really great stuff at that event.
You took that one off my back of the house. So back of the house just got about 3 minutes shorter, but I don't mind hitting on it again too, actually. I don't think there are any conferences that are as powerful as Springboard for emerging franchise. I mean, the IFA Emerging Franchisor Conference in November is pretty far out there, and it's a great conference, but the Springboard is so engaging. It is so interactive.
Yeah, it is.
And I think that any brand, even brands with 50 or 60 units who might not think that they're emerging anymore, yeah, you are. And there's plenty on the agenda that you can learn from and a ton of people that you can interact with that will make you richer for the experience. So I piggyback and applaud you, Paul, for grabbing that one from the back and moving it to the front of the house. Nice job.
Well, as we talk about interactive and engaging, it is what Franchise Today is all about. And I read an interesting quote from today's guest, Alan Young, founder and CEO of Noble Brands. It says, what began as a rapidly growing glide-out shelving company evolved into the need to become a franchisor that was equally as progressive and growth-oriented. To achieve this, we developed an organizational structure where each department operates like its own company as a method to prevent stagnation and keep our employees hungry for success. Alan, welcome to Franchise Today.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, glad for you to be here, and as I said at the beginning of the show, drool notwithstanding, I'm going to turn this over to Stan. You heard me kind of stumble a couple of times, so I don't want to embarrass myself anymore.
Alan, great having you with us. So where are we talking to you today, Alan? Where are you at?
I am in the lovely town of Bessemer, Alabama, right outside of Birmingham, where we have a manufacturing facility.
Well, I wasn't certain if you were in town here in Atlanta today, so I thought I'd ask. And wondered where you celebrated your birthday, and I hope you had a great one. And that was just yesterday, wasn't it?
It was. Thank you.
Well, happy 25th to you, right?
Exactly.
So what we'd like to try to do, Alan, is give the audience first an understanding of our guests from a personal perspective and learn a little bit about you and your background and what it was that brought you to the franchise business model as a way to progress in your own career and take your businesses. If you've taken even a deeper dive into, as I've read, about how even operating units within your businesses are treated as businesses themselves and standalones themselves. So kind of an interesting approach to the way you do things. Let's learn a little bit about you first and what brought you and franchising together, and then we can take a deeper dive into some of your concepts.
Sure. Yeah, I think what you mentioned before about the entrepreneurial approach we take with our departments, which are now companies, and the way we've really approached franchising, it's we've really focused on entrepreneurial thinking. And I think starting back with my background as a kid, I think I counted at one point 13 businesses that I started before I got into high school. And then I went to college and got an Army ROTC scholarship. So I've spent 5 years active duty in the military, which is a great place to learn leadership and process. And I got a lot of good learnings out of that. And after I got out of the active duty, I went into active reserves for a little bit and started doing ERP consulting. So I learned a lot about how to grow and run a business, putting in software and financial and HR software into large companies like Hawaiian Airlines or Hyatt, and learned how businesses really ran. And then I started my own company. So I started, had two startups, started a home technology company back in 2002, and started that, grew it very rapidly and sold it. I started an indoor quality company after that and grew it to the first year to about $1.3 million in business and had 25 employees. And after about my first year and had some really good profits, I got a little note from the Army saying, remember, you're still in the reserves, and we would like you to go to the Middle East for about six to 12 months. So I was faced with a challenge that I think most small business owners can appreciate, is the fact that my business probably wouldn't run 6 days without me, much less 6 months, because right. I was working in it so much. So the valuable lesson I learned there when I went to sell it, even though I had a 37% net profit, the bottom line is a lot of people were very interested in it, but no one wanted to buy it, because if you took me out of it, from a sales perspective and from an operations standpoint, there really wasn't much to buy. So I had to basically sell it on an earnout, which they were right. It went out of business about 6 to 7 months later while I was in the Middle East. And, you know, that lesson and other lessons I learned in business and startup as well as in the Army is a lot of what we have today in our company as far as what to do and how to build a process so you're not working in it, which is really the default I think most people go to when they start a business, is they run around trying to wear the 37 hats, and it's very difficult for them to let go of them.
Yeah, we find, all too often, I think that one of the biggest stumbling blocks for emerging franchise brands is the franchisor has had a modicum of success in operating a business and maybe even taking it to a multi-unit perspective, but then there's that pivot point where you have to let go of being the operator of the business and be the support person who is managing the operations of people, not the business itself any longer, and scale is not the same as operating. And I think all too many times we see emerging brands not making that transition, and they find themselves in a bit of trouble. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. And I think one of the things that we really embrace from an entrepreneurial core value standpoint is embracing failure. And I think that's the number one reason people don't want to let go, is they're afraid to fail. And if you learn to embrace failure, embrace mistake making, and learn from that, and, you know, we're big fans of failure. We just want to do it quickly. So if you embrace failure, you do it quickly, and it looks a lot more like rapid prototyping than failure if you do it right. But that's, to me, the number one reason why emerging franchise brands struggle to let go and why franchisees struggle as they try to grow and scale their businesses, because they don't want to fail. So they hold on way too tight.
And I don't want to go any further into this interview without first congratulating you for your service and thanking you for your service And taking from it, I guess, as a commander and operations officer, platoon leader, you've learned how to not just follow orders, but also how to give them, which imminently qualifies you to be a franchisor in today's world. So when you got into franchising, tell us what that was that you were franchising. Tell us how it started for you. And let's talk about those early franchising years, and we'll bring the tape forward from there.
Sure. So when I sold my business, I had about 6 months before I was ready to deploy. So I did what everybody does when they don't have anything to do. I got business cards at Kinko's that said consultant on them, and I started working with small business owners and consulting. And one of my clients at the time, they hired me because they wanted to grow and scale. It was a small company in Richmond, Virginia called Shelf Conversions. They had about five or six employees. They were doing a good job growing that small business locally, and they wanted to scale it and grow. And they originally said they wanted a franchise. And ironically, I was the one that talked them out of franchising, because when I looked at what they had, the systems and processes, or in some case, the lack thereof, they didn't have the ability to be a franchisor and help people run their business. So I recommended and gave them a plan, which is what they hired me to do, to have a dealer model, which is a model I was very familiar with, and it didn't require them to fully support the people, their dealers, but they could train them on how to do the installs. They could train them how to do a little bit of marketing, how to do a little bit of sales, and get them out there. And that was the plan I presented them with. And when I deployed for 6 months, I gave them the plan, and I came back and checked in with them and said, how's the plan? They said, the plan's great. And there's a little bit of a pause. And they said, we're just waiting for you to come back and implement the plan for us. So the timing on that worked out really well, because I didn't have anything to do. I just got back figuring out what was next. So I joined, became a partner in the company, started growing their dealer model. I think we added about 40 or 50 dealers our first year. And myself and one of my consultant buddies, Doug Jensen, who's in Birmingham, he started up a Shelf Conversions of Birmingham dealership. I took over the Richmond market, the Shelf Conversions of Richmond. And one day, Andrew Kerwin, the founder of this concept, he started in his parents' garage back in 2000. He was working with us, and he came in my office and said, I just broke up with my girlfriend, and I got to get out of town, because there's none of that. This town isn't big enough for both of us. So that's really where our company formed was. Andrew said he wanted to get out of town. We said, where do you want to go? And he said, Chicago. So we opened up Shelf Conversions of Chicago. He went out there, got 18 designers, got a bunch of install partners, and we started that next phase, the third location. And one of the things we didn't want to do is have an office in every single location. So we started our own call center in Birmingham, Alabama at the time. We implemented an ERP suite of software that would really manage the process flow of all these people being remote, and we weren't there. And he started Chicago, and then he went on 6 months later and opened up Milwaukee, and then he opened up Minneapolis. And then Barry Falcon joined us as a partner about a year later, and he opened up Atlanta. And that's about the time we started looking at everything we had created. And while the original business model, the small Shelf Conversions location in Richmond, Virginia, was not ready to franchise, what we had built out as a large dealer group to manage all of our businesses from 1,000 miles away was certainly something that was worth franchising, because it was a lot of systems and processes that helped us work on the business versus being in it.
And so what year was it that you actually launched as a franchise?
2008, the fall of 2008, which is a great time to launch anything, was when we actually launched the franchise.
Timing is everything.
But the next 3 years, 2009, 10, 11, were the 3 years that we made the Inc. 500. I think 411 was our ranking for the fastest growing company. So we grew very quickly during those years.
And so did you take initial dealers or representatives that weren't franchisees and give them an opportunity to fold into the new concept? And if so, how did that work out for you?
We did, and it worked out well. It wasn't without its challenges, because we had a large group of people who a lot of them did want to convert over. And we basically had to tell them, not everybody's going to convert. Here's our standards. Here's what we're looking for. We ended up converting about five of those, maybe six, I can't remember the exact number, as franchisees. And the rest of them we let be dealers, but we basically told them, when we sell a franchise in your area, we're going to cancel your dealer agreement. So that was a bit challenging. It was a hard left or right turn based on where we were going before, but we ended up bringing along the right people, and it's great to start a franchise. You know, as you guys know, the hardest franchise to sell is the first one.
Absolutely.
The second hardest is the second. And it goes like that until you get to about 10, get the validation. So to be able to start out with five or six people who have been running the model and living the model already and be able to validate really gave us a big jump and a head start.
I almost think I could push back on that about the first one being the hardest, because I think the first one, if someone trusts you and believes in you, you can sell the vision and sell the dream. I think it's the fifth or maybe the tenth one that's the hardest, because now it's not just your vision or dream. There are 5 or 10 people to call and say, how's that working out for you, who took the leap before you did. And keeping those guys happy after you've got 5 or 10 of them, then I think that next sale is the toughest one of all, because it's not all on you anymore. There's history now. It's just a thought on my part. I think I get your point about the first one being a tough one to sell, but I think that it gets tougher after the first one unless and until you've got the kinds of tools, systems, and programs in place, as it seems you apparently did, to properly scale your business.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And we use that same strategy when we launched our second brand app by Gutterback. So I've never technically sold my first franchise. So you might be right on that. And ultimately, we went through the same phase. We had a bit of a head start because we'd been running the model in both of our brands before we launched it. We brought licensees or dealers over into it. But I do remember about after year one, and we had that number of 10 to 15, where it felt like we were coming out of sort of the freshman phase into the sophomore phase, where it wasn't, the honeymoon period was over, and it was less about the vision, it was more about having traction and making sure we were continuing to improve and not just stay where we're at.
So let's talk for a minute about the gutter cleaning business. In this case, are you the franchisor, or are you the U.S. representative for the Australian franchisor? How does that relationship look?
Yeah, we're the franchisor, so we entered into a master license agreement for Gutterback. And going through the process of looking for a second brand about 3 or 4 years ago, after we built all of our systems and processes, and we had a marketing company, and we're doing media buying, and we have a call center, and we have a technology and a CRM, we're really looking for a place, another car to put that engine in, because we knew it fit really well in a lot of other different models. And we searched in all the places you would think we would look. We looked at countertop companies and cabinet refacing companies and kitchen and bathroom remodeling companies. And none of them were really a good fit. We looked to acquire either startup concepts that could be franchised or existing smaller franchises. And the bottom line is none of them were really a good culture fit. They fell into the category of what I would say is it happens a lot in franchising. Out of the 4,000 or 5,000 franchisors out there, they were just looking for a transaction to basically get royalties, and they weren't focused on truly putting things in place to help the partners, franchise partners, grow. And they didn't look at their franchisees as franchise partners. So we knew that wouldn't be a culture fit, and we got introduced to Gutterback, Jillian Harper, who's now our COO. She brought the concept of Gutterback to the U.S. She did a pilot in Long Island, and she was looking for a franchise partner. And when we looked at that business, it's been in Australia for 20 years. Her father started it. It's, I believe, the second largest franchise in Australia. And we looked at the way that they thought about franchising and looked at their franchise partners. It's just that from a culture perspective and really having a heavy focus on franchisee success, we found that that was a great match for our second brand. So we acquired the U.S. license rights to that about 3 years ago, and we've taken it slow because, along the lines of the first one being the hardest, second brand, and we're only into our second one, but the second one's a lot harder than the first because everyone's hyper-focused on that first brand, and the second one you bring along is kind of, especially as it's emerging and starting, is kind of a second thought quite a bit. So we brought that brand in, and we piloted it for a year. So we wanted to make sure we could do it before we started selling it. And then we did the licensing approach. So we had about 4 or 5 licensees that we used to make sure that we knew how to service that franchise brand and those franchisees as partners really well and get all the kinks out of the system before we started selling franchises, which we did. We just launched about a month ago. And we're, I believe, on our third franchisee right now.
So from the consumer's perspective, are these brands marketed to get, do you actually, let me back up before I ask that question and first ask this one. Are any of your franchisees of Shelf Genie also gutter franchisees as well? Are there back-end synergies with the two companies that make it viable for them to be marketed to the same consumer bases and that there are some economies of scale and some of the consumer marketing that you might do?
There's not as much as we were looking for when we're out. That's why we look for the synergistic home improvement inside the home, countertop companies, bathroom modeling, things like that. So I would say our franchisee profile could overlap. We currently don't have any Shelf Genie franchisees that are Outback, that are back franchisees. That was our hope when we were looking for a brand. But really where we landed was, you know, culture to us and both brands having a really strong noble purpose, which is where Noble Brands came from, was much more important than synergy and overlap. There is synergy and overlap, I would say, on the back end. As we grow the supporting companies, we're able to bring in, you know, higher level thought leadership and scale that we wouldn't have if we had just one brand. So that's, I think, where the overlap is. And the things we learned, there are some learnings that happen in both of the brands that we can share with others. And there's a lot of scale, but the models are both executive models, but it's a different type of executive model with Shelf Genie. If you come in and say, I really can't wait to install shelves, you're not going to be a good fit. With Outback Gutterback, you need to get out there, at least for the first 3 to 6 months, learn the business, work the business to be able to get your second, third, fourth truck. So Outback Gutterback still is an executive model, but it's a lot more hands-on and physical than I would say than Shelf Genie is at all.
So it's evident then that we have disparities in the brands and there are things that they accommodate and do for their consumers, but that word noble just crept into the conversation, and I'll bet that's got a lot to do with both companies and the common denominator of corporate culture. Why don't we talk a little bit about Noble Brands and what that corporate culture represents to both of the entities that are operating units of Noble?
Yes, so Noble Brands believes in supporting companies that have a truly authentic noble purpose. So for Shelf Genie, that's turning frustration and pain into enjoyment and love, and that's what our Shelf Genie brand focuses on. And Outback Gutterback is to build trust by delivering peace of mind. So both brands focus on their noble purpose. The supporting companies at Noble Brands focus on delivering great service, and really the Shelf Genie noble purpose works well for our home office staff as they're supporting both franchise brands of turning frustration, pain into enjoyment, love. Because really when you get into starting a business, whether it's franchise or otherwise, you want to be able to love that business. But it doesn't start out that way. It starts out, as we all know, with a lot of frustration, a lot of pain, a lot of fear, uncertainty and doubt. And every day our home office staff comes into work, they're working very diligently to make sure that we can turn that frustration pain into a lifestyle business that has a lot of enjoyment and love.
Well, I can't find any fault in that, and I think that you actually put it not just on a placard as your mission or vision, but you put it on your night title as your name. Pretty much says you're walking the talk inside of your organization. Hey, you're listening to Franchise Today. I'm Stan Friedman, along with Paul Segretto. And we're speaking today with Alan Young, founder and CEO of Noble Brands, franchisors of multiple concepts, including Shelf Genie and Outback Gutterback. Franchise Today is brought to you by FRM Solutions, offering best-in-class CRM and document management software designed specifically for managing franchise relationships. Built in industry-leading Microsoft Dynamics CRM, FRM solutions are both cloud-based and fully accessible from right inside your Outlook inbox. With FRM, you spend more time focused on growing your business while their systems are effectively managing workflows and collaborative communications with your prospective and existing franchisees. Sort, report, and dashboard all of your vital data and empower your teams to accelerate franchise sales, streamline store openings, and better perform field operations, unit-level performance, and compliance. No hassles, no long-term contracts, no excuses, just solutions. FRM Solutions on the web at frmsolutions.com. Franchise Today also brought to you today by the Franchise Foundry, boasting more than 30 years of experience helping emerging brands bring sustainable growth to their franchise concepts. Franchise Foundry utilizes a hybrid approach combining coaching and consultation to foster effective solutions for their clients. From general operational and change management to traditional and digital marketing, relationship and business management, and of course, franchise recruitment and development. Let the Franchise Foundry team assist you with scaling your brand, raising capital, and even with the exploration of mergers and acquisitions. Learn more about the Franchise Foundry and their expanding list of clients at franchisefoundry.com. That's www.franchisefoundry.com for Paul Segretto's Franchise Foundry. So, Alan, we've touched a lot on you, the person, and your training and your discipline. And, again, thank you for your military service, which I know, as we've learned through many interviews that Paul and I have conducted with guests on this program, we've found a really strong common denominator with companies that provide principle-centered leadership, having at the helm those who have given service to our nation and have brought the disciplines of military service to them, to their franchise businesses. I want to delve into the franchise side of the business now, if we would, and talk a little bit about how your franchise model looks and if there are differences between each of the brands. Learn a little bit about what it is you look for in franchisees, what they should be looking for in you, and how you've taken your brands to market and offering your franchises. So I'll leave it to you to decide where you want to start, but that's a lot to unpack, and I'd certainly like to give the audience the opportunity to learn enough about both of your brands in the time we've got left today.
Sure. Well, I think for both of our brands, some of the similarities is we're not looking for someone who wants to buy a job. We're looking for someone who wants to scale and grow a business. In both brands, we provide a lot of support. Basically, the entire front and back office is handled by our staff. We have a marketing team that handles all the marketing, and they just need to focus on growing their business, which is really, I think there's two types of people out there. There's people that want to more focus on operations and making sure things are streamlined, and then those that are more growth-focused that want to grow their business. And I found years ago that when I started my first business, you know, the moment you start a business, you have a problem. You might have more than one, but you have a really big problem, which is you don't have any sales. So when I started my first business, I went out and focused on sales, and I got a lot of sales. And then you realize you have a new problem. You've got to be able to execute on that and have the operations to do it. So you go and focus on the operation piece, and then you get a new problem. You got to get sales again. And as a small business owner, it felt like a really big pendulum that would swing from one extreme to the other. And really where you want to land is in the middle where things are balanced. And I was finding that balance happened for about a microsecond as it was swinging from one to the other. So really what we've done in both of our brands very intentionally is make sure that we have all the back office support, all the front office support, and for both of them that they can focus on growth. With Outback Gutterback, that's 70% right now of our business is commercial. So they're going out and talking and networking with property managers and doing commercial work, giving out bids, as well as the residential work that usually comes through our business support center. We schedule appointments for them. With Shelf Genie, it's also focused on getting the marketing out there and going out and building a great design team and sales team. And while they do have some operational things to do, like get a good install partner or install partners, they really get to focus most of their efforts on growing and building a team and growing their business.
So you had mentioned the support center. Is this an actual call center which will be used for, you know, the potential of additional brands?
It is. So we have about 15 people in our business support center. We call it that instead of a call center because one of the things we noticed when we start a call center, you start recruiting people from the call center industry. That's not the typical person that we want to bring in. So we call it a business support center because they're not just answering the phones, taking messages, doing sort of call center activities. They're really helping run the entire front office and back office for our franchise team. So we have that group has grown. We've also invested in, I think, the business support center is really the people and then the CRM system and the processes that really run that. So we've invested over $1 million in both of our CRM systems for both of our brands that allow us to take an appointment. If you call in for either brand, you tell us where you're at, it pulls up whose franchisee that is, what their schedule is. It schedules the trucks or the design appointments real time. It sends notices to the people, updates their calendars in the field. When they upload sales, it automatically has a process where those sales are approved. The manufacturing orders sent out. The installers know to go to measure. There's dashboards that measure both the process and the KPIs. So, for example, this is one of the things that I think is really powerful. We have very open KPIs for all of our franchisees. So our Shelf Genie and Outback Gutterback franchisees can log into our portal and see the 8 or 9 KPIs that are really important to them and where they rank with the entire system. So they can see everybody's KPIs and where they rank. So it's really helpful, not just for the people on top to say, hey, I'm on top, but if you're lagging in any KPI, you can see who's number 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 in the system. And that's basically who you need to call and talk to. Ask them why you're doing what you're doing. So those systems really go hand in hand with our business support center. They're not just taking calls. They have a very powerful tool that allows them to support our franchisees in a way that's very meaningful.
Certainly. Thank you for clarifying that, because I would imagine this type of investment in human and technological resources has to be a very strong competitive factor against other brands that transitioning executives might be looking for. And as you said, you're not looking for just somebody, you know, to replace a job. So I think that's a definite strong competitive factor there.
Yeah, and I think it speaks to, if you looked at the profiles or met our franchisees for, say, Shelf Genie and now Outback Gutterback, the ones coming in, you know, you'd be really surprised at the caliber of people that we've been able to attract. We have 3 PhDs in Shelf Genie. We've got a number of recovering attorneys, as they will put it. We've got, you know, a large number of people with master's degrees, people that ran divisions for Capital One, you know, really sharp, smart, focused people that you wouldn't think would want to get into a shelving business. And I'm sure the same will be true as we grow out by Gutterback. None of them grew up really wanting to be purveyors of wooden shelving. And we don't sell wooden shelving. We design solutions, but the brand and the model is very attractive to them, but more attractive, I think, if you speak to most of them, would be the business systems and processes we put in place so they can grow and scale their business with a partner that's going to allow them to continue to grow really without limit.
So to continue on in the support mechanism, explain a little bit about, if you would share with us a little bit about the marketing support so that the franchisee can focus on the operational core parts of the business and developing the business.
Yeah, absolutely. So the way we've done all of our different systems is our franchisees get to act truly as CEOs. So as a CEO, you have a director of marketing or VP of marketing who will give you recommendations, but ultimately you're going to make the decision. So in the marketing example, we have a media buying company who looks at all the different media that we've been placing. We're tracking. We have unique toll-free numbers and local numbers for every single marketing activity we do, and that's all in our CRM. So they can see the results, the leads, the KPIs, the ROIs for all those different marketing functions and make really good recommendations based on what's working on a national level with different marketing vehicles. And they present that plan to the franchisee. The franchisee can buy locally if they want, but they offer a media buying service. It's 12% versus the industry standard of 15%. And all the profits from that media buying group go into the ad fund. So it's not an additional revenue stream. It just helps us build our brand.
Mm-hmm.
And we do all the creative services. Once they decide what do we want to buy, we do the ads. We place the ads for them. When the phone rings, our business support center is picking it up and scheduling the appointments for them. So they don't have to focus on trying to answer a phone call in the middle of an appointment or a restaurant or whatever.
So, Alan, how do you find these people that become your great franchisees who'd wake up in the morning not thinking about, you know, I always say nobody wakes up in the morning thinks about buying a franchise. Okay, I think I'm going to go buy a franchise today, much less I'm going to go buy a shelf franchise today or some gutter franchise today. How do you get these high-profile corporate people to even learn that there's an opportunity like yours out there, much less interested in it?
That's a great question, because the Shelf Genie and I think Outback Gutterback is proving to be a little bit different, more of a standard model where you understand what it is. It's gutter cleaning and pressure washing, and it's very apparent when you find it through search engine optimization or pay-per-click or the different franchise portals, that makes a lot more sense. So we're getting more organic leads than we certainly got with Shelf Genie. And with Shelf Genie, we were faced with that problem you just posed, is people look at it and go, is that really a business? And they don't give it much thought, and they move on to the next thing because they just don't get it. And that's really, we've created this market. It existed before, but we're really building the market. We're a market maker, so people don't quite understand our industry. So we've used brokers very successfully over the years. I would say 80% of our franchisees came through brokers, and they've done a really good job because, as you know, they present usually about three concepts. And when they present us, they usually get that reaction that we just talked about. But the broker gets to say, you know what, I've been to the Discovery Day, or I know a lot about them. Just give, you know, give it a look. Take 5-10 minutes. Take a look at it. I promise you'll be at least interested in this. So it's really that. I think that's what it takes, at least as we're building the brand for Shelf Genie, since it was a different concept that people didn't quite understand. We use brokers very heavily and successfully in that process.
From the time you're introduced to a candidate for your franchises through any of the broker networks, what's your process look like, and what kind of a financial commitment is the person who's coming to you bringing with them?
Sure. So the process we follow when we get introduced from whether it's a broker lead or anywhere else is we have a portal they go through, an onboarding portal. We use Process Peak at the moment. There's lots of good portals out there, but I think it's less about which portal you're using but how you use that portal. So it's usually a series of 4 or 5 calls where they're unlocking different steps and going through a process where they're learning in a way that we found to be the right way or the right order in which to learn. So it really culminates in a Join the Team Day. So we used to call it a Discovery Day, but we really want people coming into to our home office and meeting our team when they've really done all their validation, they're ready to go. And it's more of a Join the Team, Meet the Team Day versus discovering, which is what we did kind of early on.
And from a financial commitment perspective, what is the profile of a franchisee? What's the minimum requirement that they've got to bring? And share with us what those numbers would be for each of your brands.
Sure. With Shelf Genie, our franchise fee is $45,000. Most of our franchisees do buy multiples. We have, I think, the average, we've got 50 franchisees in about 140 locations, so it's almost an average of 3. We've got some people that own 6, 7, or 8. We do have some people that own 1, but we have a lot that own 2, 3, 4 is kind of the sweet spot for that brand. So you can, and the multi-unit discount after you buy one for $45,000. Everyone after that is $36,000. So if you're buying 2 or 3, we don't have a large capex with Shelf Genie. You have to get a home show display and some seed marketing money, but usually about $100 to $150 is the initial investment, depending upon how many territories they're buying. And we like that. You know, we like to make sure they have that in cash. We don't like to see or rollover IRA or 401k, things like that, but we don't like seeing people go into debt and not be properly funded, because we found that's one of the main reasons that people don't do well, is they don't start out with the right capital. So that's Shelf Genie, Outback Gutterback. The franchise fee is $35,000, and each one after that, down to the fifth, that you can take $5,000 off of that. So the second would be $30,000, the third would be $25,000, and so on. And we have a veterans discount with Shelf Genie that's 15% off the franchise fee, and if you're a disabled veteran, it's 25% off. With Outback Gutterback, you get a free franchise. So if you buy one, you get one free. If you buy two, you get one free. And you also lock in. If you buy 3 with Outback Gutterback, if you buy more later, you lock in at that price, that lower price that you bought at.
And I'm going to guess that a fairly significant number of your franchisees come back for second bites of the apple. Am I correct in that assumption?
You are. And we've also seen a lot of consolidation with our franchisees. So as you know, in franchising, it's not a good fit for everybody. I haven't met a franchisor yet that's been able to pick all the right franchisees. It's up to the franchisee to go out and live the model. So as we have franchisees that struggle, we have our stronger franchisees, because of our systems and processes, they're able to pick up sometimes in markets they don't live in. So we've got our Raleigh franchisee now owns Raleigh and Charlotte. Our Boston franchisee owns all of Boston and Philadelphia. We have our Tampa franchisee lives in Nashville, and he just bought Orlando. So because of our systems and processes, they can scale and grow and not even live in the market they're at. So the consolidation is really good because we've got successful operators that want to expand, which I think is a really healthy symptom of what we're doing.
I think there's one more thing that I think is probably the crowning jewel that we should talk about today when it comes to validating all the things that we've been discussing for the past 30 or so minutes. And before we run out of time, we're going to leave time for you to tell our audience where you may be showing up or where they can find you or how, if they're interested in learning more. But I would like you to spend a moment or two talking about ACG first, Alan, and talk about the Atlanta Capital Connection and what that validation really says about your company to have the accreditation that you do from them.
Yeah, that was a great award. It was the Atlanta Fast 40, so the 40 fastest-growing companies in Atlanta. They broke it out into two groups, medium-sized and large businesses. So out of the 20 medium-sized businesses fastest-growing in Atlanta, we were chosen as one of those. And, you know, what's great about that award is not just based on application numbers. They sit down and interview your team to look at what you're doing to make sure that it's not just a numbers exercise. They look at your core values, how you live your culture, your employees, your franchise team. They really dive relatively deeply into why you're doing what you're doing and what you're doing versus just some numbers.
Well, it's a really proud honor for you, and I think it's you're clearly modest about it, but I think that it's the greatest validation in the world that you can be scrutinized as they do and come away with those types of honors. It says a whole lot about your organization. And it should tell prospective franchisees a little bit more about who it is they're thinking about getting into bed with. So I think that's awesome. Any shows or expos that you're going to be participating in the coming weeks that you might want to call to the audience's attention?
No shows or expos. We've done a number of them in the past with Shelf Genie, and for the reasons we talked about, shows and expos don't work for that brand. But I know as we ramp up, we're getting a large influx of leads for Outback Better Back. So our team is really, we love to grow, but we also love to grow correctly. And they're getting so many leads right now from both the franchise broker network as well as from organic leads that shows are probably on the horizon in the spring. But right now they've got their hands full with lots of interest from those communities.
Paul, I'm going to ask if you've got anything else that you might want to chime in with here as we get close to the wrap.
Well, I think the million-dollar question is how can prospective candidates learn more about both of the brands?
Well, it's fairly simple. Shelfgenie.com, S-H-E-L-F-G-E-N-I-E, is the website to go to, and there's a franchise opportunity link on that front page. And you can learn about the overall brand and explore the franchise opportunity there. For Outback Guttervac, it's outbackguttervac.com. And same thing, you get to learn a little bit about the brand itself, and the franchise opportunity link will take you to all the things you want to know to pique your interest if it's a good fit for both of those brands.
Alan, I really appreciate you being our guest today. I was very impressed by many of the things that you said. You might have even heard me, you know, blurt out, wow, when you talked about the additional discount for disabled veterans, and my hat's off to that. I was really impressed by that, as well as the tremendous support mechanism that you have in place. I look forward to your continued success, and I anticipate we'll be seeing some additional brands coming into the Noble Brands Group. Thank you again for being our guest.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks, Dan.
My pleasure, Alan. Thank you so much. Look forward to seeing you on the trail.
Thanks. Same here.
Well, Stan, it's always amazing, as we've been talking about the last couple of months, a lot of these brands, you know, that are somewhat under our radar, especially in the non-food side. And I think today, just you know, although I've been aware of Shelf Genie and certainly know, you know, Barry Falcon very well, and that's how I was first introduced to it, this really puts a fine point to it. And understanding now about Outback Guttervac, I mean, I think they've got some great things coming along, but I don't want to waste any more time because I know you have some very important stuff to share with our audience about back of the house. So here's Stan.
Well, I did have a couple more things, but no rush off of the topic you just kind of closed the interview out with, Paul. It's becoming something I really look forward to and anticipate now each and every week, that we come together with interviews with executives of organizations that we know by name, but we really haven't learned a whole lot about. And each of these interviews and the depth of leadership and the kinds of programs that these franchisors have put together that we just don't hear enough about. You know, I think we're almost as guilty as the general consumer when you ask somebody what is a franchise and they tell you McDonald's, and that's what they think is, well, it is, but that's not all there is. And people just think of food concepts. Well, that's just not all there is, from logistics to concepts like Shelf Genie. And some of these leaders that we've had on in the recent weeks have just been absolutely awe-inspiring for me, and I'm building a Rolodex, if you will, of people I'm going to be going back to for more conversations about things I can continue to learn from them, which is really the beauty of our franchise business model and learning so much about these companies that we just don't hear about every day, and hearing the leadership extol the virtues and values that they bring to their franchise communities is very refreshing to me, Paul.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
So a couple things on the upcoming front that we wanted to close today out with, and thank you for jumping in with Springboard, because to me that is, this will be my third one that I've participated and sponsored, and it has grown just exponentially year over year, and that's not for any other reason except the take-home value that is delivered at Springboard each year continues to trump itself, no puns intended here, no political statements being made. But the reality is Lane and Brad have turned that into an amazing program, and the thing that is most appealing to me about it is the depth and the level of interaction and engagement. So it's not just networking after hours that brings value, but the actual programs themselves are tailored around engagement and case studies and interaction, which brings people from different disciplines in franchising into pre-selected groups, which is what they did last year that was so terrific, was they assigned a well-rounded group of executives to work collectively on programs and on projects as part of Springboard. So you might have been grouped with a dozen people, but it was a balanced group of people who represented franchise sales, operations and support, legal and compliance, and you had a well-rounded group as a team, and then you worked on your case study as a team, and there may have been three or four different teams working on the same case study and then presenting their solutions to the total audience and to a panel of esteemed experts like Charlie Chase and Shelley Sun, and they voted on which ones did the best job. But think about all the intellectual capital that's shared when you work collectively and interactively, engagingly like they do at Springboard. So I'm looking forward to this year's, and I'm glad you jumped in there with that on the front end. Now, to serve equal time, I think I have to give Brian Schnell and the Faegre Baker Daniels team a little love here as well, as next week the Faegre Baker Daniels Franchise Summit is convening, and there is going to be some 140 attendees expected from 20 states and three countries being represented. And this year, it's going to open, as it does every year, with the current chairman of the IFA in attendance, and Aziz Hashim will be there and will be participating in the program and actually facilitating a town hall meeting, which is how the program is going to open up. And there's going to be, again, a ton of Q&A in the programming. The way it has been established this year is going to be workshops, roundtables, and the town hall. So very little structure, very little PowerPoint, a whole lot of engaging interaction. And I'm just proudly going to share that I'm involved in one of those workshops and will be leading a workshop with Paul Pickett and our friend, good friend Paul Pickett from Wild Birds Unlimited and Matthew Jonas from Top Fire Media, talking about how to more effectively use technology in the franchise development process. But there's a who's who of franchising executives from both the supplier as well as the franchisor side of the business. It may be probably getting close to, if not too late to register, but I'd get online and take a look and see if you've not yet made plans to do so. The summit opens Wednesday next week, the 17th of August in Minneapolis. Just Google it, the Faegre Baker Daniels Franchise Summit, and see if you can still find your way to participate in this every year. And just tops itself from the year before, terrific program put on by the franchise team at Faegre Baker Daniels. Lastly, Paul, August, again, supposedly the dog days of summer, but, you know, as we're learning here with both the Faegre program and a week later in Chicago, Marianne O'Connell is returning with the 2016 Bigger Than Ever Franchise Capital Exchange, which again is going to feature a who's who of the IFA and IFA member companies. Aziz Hashim will be participating here as well, and the chairman will be joined by the CEO of the IFA, Robert Crisante, will be giving a bit of a talk. John Francis, our prior guest and friend from Twin State Development, Jana Bailey from FranNet, Daryl Johnson, FranData, Deb Evans is there, Dave Koch from, it's just a who's who. There is a ton of people involved in this program, all about bringing together emerging brands and capital partners and helping them get paired up with the right kind of money so that they can bring sustainable growth to their brands, that they can bring professional management to their brands and do the kinds of things that Alan and others who we've been talking with week over week have already learned it's so important to do to scale your business. So the Franchise Capital Exchange, for those of you who are emerging brands looking to make connections with capital partners, for those of you who might want to learn how to prepare for next year's program, you might be able to sit in on this one. Franchise suppliers that want to be around emerging franchisors, and of course, emerging franchisors that are ready to seek capital. It's all happening downtown Chicago, August 24th, 25th, and 26th. You can find out more on the web, or you can call 714-434-1516 for more information from Marianne O'Connell and the Franchise Capital Exchange. That's franchisecapitalexchange.com. Paul, it's been a very full hour, my friend, and I wish you'd stop drooling because I've been doing way too much talking.
Well, it has been a great hour. I want to remind everybody, as we talked about, you know, the host at the Springboard event, Brad Fishman and Lane Fisher, we always seem to leave out Entrepreneur Media Group. They're one of the sponsors as well. Next week is our guest, Stan. We have Sam Haddock, who's in the process of developing Costa Vida. So looking forward to that, and I know you'll be on the air with us just before speaking at the Faegre event. And then we've got a full lineup taking us all the way through September, looking for some special events. In the meantime, hopefully we can land Aziz Hashim into the mix, especially ahead of the fan of Washington, D.C. But all is good, and I really appreciate all that you do for Franchise Today, as well as the various PR firms that continue to line up some just absolutely tremendous guests. Until next week, my name is Paul Segretto, wishing you the best, the very best, in this great, great thing we call franchising, and Franchise Today is